Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with the head theater critic from the Pioneer Press City version, Beverly Friend. She will be talking to Tom Williams about what it's like to be a theater critic, and they will also be doing a new review segment for us as well. Also, we have Chicago's theater news, so sit back, relax, and get ready to talk theater.
Hello, and thank you for listening. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is Beverly Friend. Hello, Beverly.
Hello, Tom.
And you are one of the premier theater reviewers here in Chicago.
On the A-list.
On the A-list. And tell us your background now, because you've been reviewing, and you were a college teacher, and you've got quite a varied background.
Well, I was teaching at Oakton Community College, journalism and English, and I went to see a play that the short story theater did at Royal George upstairs. And it was a play that they had adapted from Henry Mark Petrakis' stories. And I loved it.
I know Harry Mark Petrakis' story, a local Chicago writer.
Yeah, and I went home. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and I just had this burning desire to write a review of Harry's. I had not written any reviews. This is more than 10 years ago. Had never written any reviews, but I just was burning to do it. And I liked Harry and I wanted to do something for him. So I wrote this review and I thought, what shall I do with it now? And I sent it out to the Herald. And because my paper, we used the same printer they did, the school paper.
It's the Daily Herald?
This is the Daily Herald. And they printed it.
Okay, that's great.
And I was very happy, and I thought nothing more of it. Although I said to them at the time, could I have sent it to more than one place? And they said, sure, we didn't pay you for it. You could have sent it anywhere. 2 years went by, and I went to see a play at the Meyer Kaplan Jewish Center, also short story theater, the same group from College of DuPage, who I'd not seen in the intervening years, doing a story by a man named Eremy Sternoff. And Eremy had smuggled out his biography written on cigarette papers from a camp, a concentration camp in Russia, and his wife had smuggled it out, and they'd made the book and the play from this, and it blew me away. And afterwards, I went over to the wife, and I said to her, my husband had been dead by that time, and I had someone translate to her, I know how you must feel. I, too, as a widow, would like to carry on my husband's work. And we talked for a moment. And I came home again. I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I wrote the review of this play. This was in 1995. And this time, remembering what the Herald had said, that I could send it out, I sent it out to a bunch of places. And Lerner Papers called me and said, is it exclusive to us? And of course, it wasn't exclusive to them. And I said, no, but I didn't send it out to any of your direct competitors. I didn't send it to Pioneer, which was their direct competitor, ironically now working for Pioneer. And they offered me a job reviewing.
That's terrific. That's the backdoor for auditioning. But, of course, you have the background. You do have a PhD.
I have a PhD, but in English.
In English.
In English and in literature. And my journalism, well, I had written my doctoral dissertation on science fiction fandom. I had written a book, a textbook called Science Fiction, The Classroom in Orbit. So I had done this kind of thing. And I had written articles along the way, feature articles along the way, randomly. And
so, I mean, you were a professional writer.
But this was just, both of them were go to bed, wake up 4 in the morning. And for a long time, that was my pattern. And still, I often come in from
you,
a play. And
so your philosophy, and I do that. Sometimes you do have to sleep on a play.
Rarely.
Okay, usually you can do it right away.
Well, also, as I get older, I'm afraid I'm going to forget it. And the truth is, I do forget them. Someone will say to me, oh, I saw XYZ because you recommended it. Nothing. What the heck was XYZ? Mainly because the titles and the plays often have no relation to each other, and I don't remember what title went with what.
That's true. I have gone to plays telling people, I don't think I've seen it. Within the first 5 minutes, I remember the entire play because it's the title. Yeah.
So I like to write it while it's really fresh. And then my deadline is Monday morning.
Okay.
So I see a play between Wednesday and Sunday. So I can write anytime up to there. But if I have a Wednesday or Thursday, I let it sit till Sunday. If I have a Sunday play and have to write it for Monday, of course I do. But I like to have it sit and sort of brew and change words here and there. They very rarely do I hear from the editors. I don't hear from anybody. I write, and I send it in my email, and a check comes, and then I write, and I send it in my email. And every now and again, when Leia Zeldis was my editor, I had more feedback. Now with Michael Bonesteel, only rarely, although he loved the lead that I wrote on a play that I hated. So if you really plan something, he got a kick out of it.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Sometimes the most fun is when you have to pan a play.
Well, the ones that I remember most vividly, one of my early ones was on Hunting Cockroaches.
And Hunting Cockroaches?
That's the name of the play.
That sounds like it's in trouble already.
All the characters came out from under the bed on the stage. But I remember that I wrote, while the characters on the stage were discussing the problems of insomnia, the 12 people in the audience had no trouble at all. But the one that Bonesteel liked was this production of The Doll's House, which they did at Museum of Contemporary Art, which I truly hated. And I said at that
time, I remember that show.
Yeah, I said, the only thing worse than seeing a nude male dwarf from behind would be if he would turn around. And that one, I got Bonesteel to say he liked that one. And I think that's the only comment he's ever made.
Okay, but now, just so people would know, that you generally like most theater
see. Well, people tell me that I generally write more positive
reviews. Yes, you do.
The point is, it's easy to write when you hate, easy to write when you love. It's the ones in the vast middle. When I was writing for Leia Zeldis, she would say to me, well, did you like it or did you hate it? Your obligation is to tell the reader, should he go or shouldn't he go? And that's what I keep in mind.
Yeah, let's get in that, in your philosophy, because I was taught that you're a combination of a consumer advocate of a reviewer, should people go and spend their time and their money, and also critiquing and evaluating the production and evaluating the art form.
Well, I was also, I remember someone saying that if you really trusted the movie critic or the theater critic, all they would have to write is yes or no, because you would know their philosophy and what they liked so well that you would then, that's all you would need to know. And I also feel that you bring with you whatever you are in terms of your own background, history, and experience. So that there's some plays I may well not be the right reviewer for.
But do you say that? Is it fair for a reviewer to say that your bias is up front?
Let's take Rent.
Okay.
I hated Rent.
And I agree.
I said so. I believe you should pay your rent and lead an honorable life and not blow off all this stuff. So I thought it was immoral. Now, this may be my age speaking too. And I got two reactions. I got some people in their 20s who emailed me that I was stuck in the suburban housewife who didn't know what I was talking about. On the other hand, when I walked into Oakton Community College, senior citizens ran out to shake my hand and tell me how happy they were with what I had written because they felt the same way. So I know where I am and who I am, and I'm of course stuck from writing from this point of view.
Yeah, and I think after a while, you develop a following, and people know who you are and what you like and don't like, so they can put a sort of perspective.
Well, as I told you the story earlier, when my younger daughter was about 4 or 5, she went next door to see a movie at a neighbor's house. And she came back and told me it was about a movie. It was about a man who had something in his pocket. And everybody in the story wanted to know what he had in his pocket. And they ran after him, and they chased him, and they shot at him, but nobody found out what it was. And when I asked the neighbor, what movie did you see? They said, Bad Day at Black Rock. That's a movie where Spencer Tracy has one arm. He keeps his jacket sleeve in his pocket. You never see the sleeve out of the pocket. My little girl had made a story that fit that world from her world of experience. So we all bring to anything what we are at that time. And again, may like something at one age and not like it at another age, because we too have changed as we've gone along the way. I was talking today, Oakton's having a big Lear Fest coming up, and I was interviewed today also for Pioneer, and I remember saying to the lady, when she asked me why we were doing it, that a 17-year-old might not resound to Lear, But someone who's a senior citizen who's worried about what he's going to leave his children, what his obligations are to adult children, what the obligations of the children are to him, would find this a more resonating experience. And it would be, and that's why the Emeritus Program has chosen to have 11 different things going on about Lear.
Yeah, let me throw a little plug for that. You were able to get to Michael Halverson and Bob Falls to come. Wow.
Michael Halverson is our leadoff, and he's going to be doing,
he's from Writers Theater.
He's going to be doing Lear from an actor's point of view. And Robert Falls did this fantastic production.
Fantastic, yes.
And it's going to be question and answer, and I'm going to ask him, why did you do it as you did it? What, where did you get the ideas from?
And that's coming up in August and September.
From August 14th until September 20th, and it's 11 different things, $50 for the whole series. Go to as many or as few as you like. And there are three different film versions of Lear. The Orson Welles version leaves out the Gloucester story. The Peter Brooks version is supposed to be so dark and sinister that it's mind-boggling. Then we're going to talk about the Japanese version. We're going to talk about the Yiddish version. We're going to talk about the Russian version, all of which, is another world. And what I wanted to do, they turned me down on. This was a great idea. This is the best idea of all times. I wanted to do Lear, followed by a session on estate planning.
And that's cool. They turned you down on that.
They turned me down on that one because they said that most of our senior citizens were so sophisticated they had already planned their estates. And they had never been able to fill a class.
But you and I both know that's not true.
I just thought estate planning was such a natural development from Lear. How should you divide the package? That I want.
You just have an unbounding amount of energy, don't you?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah. So as much of a theater person as you are, and a theater fanatic, that's not totally what you're about. That's a small segment, right?
No, the truth is, Tom, for you, theater is really your life. You see 300 plays a year.
Yeah.
For me, it's a hobby. I see 50 plays a year. But meanwhile, I'm teaching classes. I'm giving lectures.
You started out as a teacher.
And with a love of science fiction, because that's where my dissertation is.
On science fiction.
On science fiction fans, people who read science fiction.
Well, my research shows that you're considered one of the experts in science fiction.
I used to tell them I'm probably the expert in Lincolnwood. But beyond that, Lincolnwood.
Okay, right. Well, let's go back to reviewing now.
Reviewing.
Are you a believer in putting ratings on your reviews? Like stars or highly recommend?
No, we don't, but I would like to. I think it would be a good idea because it gives a person immediately an idea, should I bother?
So you're a believer that we should label them? Because there's two valid ideas. I'm a believer of that also.
Yeah, Pioneer doesn't label, and I haven't ever really pushed for it. Although I wanted to have something called a capsule comment, whereas every time I walk out of a play, I try to think, what one word could I use to sum up this play? So for a while with Leah as my editor, I would give the word, and she would often use it in the headline.
Okay. But she wrote the headline, as a lot of papers do.
Well, as I teach my students, the writer of an article is never the writer of a headline because you don't know the space it needs to fill. But so I would like the idea of a capsule comment, just like presumptuous.
All right, let me throw one at you since we both saw it and we talked about it in our review segment, High School Musical.
Puerile.
Okay. I'd call it mediocre. All right.
And Joe? Oh, God, Joe.
Yeah, what's one word?
Oh, no. Well, no. The one Joe. And then Pajama Men, which I really, really hated.
Okay.
Go back to bed.
Go back to pajama. Okay. So, all right. So you believe in ratings.
Yes.
And do you believe that you're writing not for the theater people or to critique the play, like for theater magazine. You're writing for consumers.
I'm writing for consumers, although occasionally you have a moment. I never forget. I was seeing. I don't remember. It was a play about. I'm trying to think. It was a story. Brer Rabbit, the Brer Rabbit story. I can't think of the name, but it's been banned. It's no longer shown in the movies. Because it was not politically correct.
Okay.
In any case, it was a play that was you can no longer see that play. That movie.
Because it's politically incorrect.
Politically incorrect.
Okay.
And I was seeing, they were talking about the man, Joel Chandler Harris.
Okay.
And they were talking about Disney, and they were talking about early Disney movies, and they were talking about these things. And afterwards in the discussion, they began, they told the information that this particular work had been banned. And I said, that should be in your program. That's an essential piece of information when you're printing the program. It makes a difference in seeing this play to know that, yes, that historically this was, and they changed their program. So every now and then you get this sense of, yes, I saw something that it wasn't the play, but it improved the play to know the historic fact.
Okay.
So sometimes you feel that, you know, that you could tell them, or things like, for the point of view of a reviewer, if you're printing out these programs, even if you have very little money, put little pictures of the people in. It doesn't cost a lot to put pictures of the cast.
I cannot agree with you more. There's nothing worse. In fact, with Photoshop and all these programs on the internet, it's very simple to do. You put the, you know, it's not like it wasn't printing years ago and you had to make it into the dots, right? Because I go to storefronts, you and I go to storefronts, and there'll be 10 or 12 people in the cast, and you don't know who's who. They're not wearing their nameplates, you know.
Should I tell you my worst error in reviewing ever?
Oh, well, since we're talking, sure, go ahead.
This is really embarrassing. I saw a play at the Neo-Futurists.
Neo-Futurists, okay.
Right. I saw a play about a girl who was kind of an ugly duckling, and she then took off her glasses and became more beautiful. The typical story of this.
Okay.
Right, and I enjoyed it. But the girl made such a dramatic change that I thought maybe it was a different actress. But you know, with women, you can put on a wig, you can put on high heels, you could change a lot. So I looked at the program and I looked around and there was no other person listed. So in my review, I wrote, she was so brilliant, you almost thought it was another actress doing it. The next day, I saw the Chicago Tribune review. Mike came out, and I saw the Tribune, and the Tribune said there were two different actresses.
Oh.
And I was horrified. I called my editor, and she said, well, check it out. And I called the theater. Yes, they had put another actress in. They had not listed in the program because they wanted to fool everybody. And the other actress had been behind the county candy counter for the whole first act, selling candy, and they just switched the two girls. So then I went back and I was able to change it for, we come out Thursday, Wednesday and Thursday, I was able to change it. And then I wrote a correction. And the correction was, instead of saying, she was so great, I almost thought it was two girls. I wrote, it was so great, I almost thought it was two girls. And it was.
Okay.
And then I was teaching reviewing at the time. So I brought this whole thing in to show my class how easy it is to make an error, how important it is to check, how embarrassed I was. And then my best friend was in town, and she said, no, you weren't wrong. The theater was. They should have let people know by putting the name in the cast. They should not have fooled everyone.
I agree with that. What do you think?
But I was, all I know is I was totally fooled and totally embarrassed, and I corrected it, but it was like, ah!
That's interesting. But you knew how to get to that.
Well, I didn't fudge it. I mean, I went told the editor immediately, I think I made a really big mistake.
Yeah, I hate when in programs or in the press information they give us, there isn't enough, and you mistakenly put the wrong actor, you know, playing the wrong part. And I think a lot of that, and we watch pretty close and take notes and make little,
I try so hard. But truly, my kindergarten teacher said about me something that's really true. She said, more speed than accuracy. And I want to put that on my tombstone. But my daughter said I can't because people will think I drove into a tree.
Very good. Very good. So let's, so you believe that one of the roles of a theater reviewer, and the main role is to be a consumer.
Should you go to see the play?
Yeah.
And you have to then know who I am too. And there's some plays, I mean, I don't think I should review plays necessarily about the blues, about jazz music, about certain things that I'm really not familiar with.
Okay.
You know, that.
But can't you go into a sort of a reporter's mode?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And you do the best you can.
Yeah.
But you know, people also ask me, how do I pick a play to review? So you see them all, but I have a weekly paper.
Yeah.
And
I'm
going to give the secret away.
Okay.
Number one, as I hold the press release in my hand, I look at when the play ends. Because, hey, I'm a weekly paper. If it's going to be only a play for 2 weeks or for 3 days, there's no point even trying for it.
Yeah, that's true, because you don't want to have the review come out and the play's already closed.
If I come out Wednesday and the play closes Saturday,
your first criteria is how long the run is.
How long the run is. Second criteria is what day of the week does the play open? We're a Monday deadline. Pioneer wants the play to be reviewed the first week it shows, okay, not the second week. Very rarely, if things are really slow. But so I look, it must open for me between Wednesday and Sunday. So if it opens on Monday or Tuesday, even if it's the world's greatest play, I don't review it. Now, I complained about this.
That's kind of putting you in a box because...
Because some of the great stuff opens
on Mondays. Well, the Goodman, Sundays are Mondays.
So then I got permission. Once a month, I can do a play that opens on Monday, but the review only appears online and not in the paper. I don't think anybody in this world reads it. Now, somebody else said to me, I think Jonathan Abarbanel said, take the money and run. But the less, I want to be read, so
yes.
I don't tend to do this. Occasionally, a theater will let me...
Well, unfortunately, the Pioneer Press, it's hard to find their reviews on their website.
Oh, well, it's
but
even
hopefully, they will get better.
It's even harder when it's not in the paper and nobody knows it's there.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so going on with your philosophy of reviewing, how much do you think you should...
Oh, the plot?
You want to give enough of the information about the play to get them to go see it. Because I've often been told, we didn't agree with you, but you gave us enough information so that we saw it and we thought it was good. Let's say a play I didn't like.
Well, the thing is, not to give how much is enough and how much is too much, and that's a real problem.
Yeah. I know some reviewers in town that give away the farm.
Well, I know that too. And some say, like Roger Ebert used to say, a spoiler's coming up. And this is the kind of conversation I have when I take a grandchild, because I'll write the review and then the grandchild will read it and we'll say, why did you say this and not that? Why didn't you tell this part of the story? And then we sit and say, well, what is enough and what is too much?
Yeah. You should give them enough to get them tweak their interest so they know the genre, they know the era, they know generally what's happened, but you can't give away the play.
No.
I don't think that's
and,
right.
And then again, you're also supposed to be looking at other things. How well does the director handle it? Is there good choreography? What about the staging? Is it well done? Is it such a brilliant production that it doesn't matter if they stage it in a bare room?
That's true.
And
as I've learned from Hedy Weiss, that in terms of musicals, you have to talk about choreography, lighting, costume, the technical lens of theater can really make a difference.
I'm glad you mentioned Hedy, because one of the most wonderful things is writing a review and then seeing what the other reviewers have said about the same play. Most of the time, it's a consensus. Every now and then, there's really a variation in opinion. I used to take those in to teach to my classes. When Vagina Monologues came out, Lucia Morrow liked it very much, and Hedy Weiss hated it, and I was somewhere in the middle. And it was wonderful to Xerox this off and sit in the class and discuss, and they could take the same scene and talk about the same scene and one love it and one hate it, and that was intriguing.
Yeah, that's how true that is.
It's very much a learning experience to read the other reviewers.
Yeah, I agree. But I think you would agree with me. The best philosophy for a young reviewer to do is obviously you write your own first. You should never read anyone's.
Write your own first and then take a good hard look at what the other ones wrote.
Yeah, and then when you make a good point and you see that, people like Hedy and Chris Jones, then you start getting a little reinforcement. Hey, maybe I'm starting to catch on to this thing. Or at least we all saw it had the same vision. But I agree with you on that. What do you think the influence should be for a reviewer? I know in New York, there's a couple of reviewers, if they pan your show, you're dead. But thank God in Chicago, I don't believe anybody totally has the power, one or two. Cumulatively, maybe.
No. The truth is, no matter what I say, I can't hurt High School Musical.
No, it's bulletproof. That's true.
And I can't hurt some of them. However, something in the basement of a church... I can do in. Or on the other, conversely, I did one, I think, for St. Sebastian, and they wrote me and said, after I praised it, they were sold out for the rest of the run. So when you're hitting the small theaters, have an obligation to be very careful, because you're not trying to do someone in. Although I saw one play, I was supposed to see two one-act plays, and the first one-act play was so terrible that I went to the playwright and I said, the best thing I could do for you is not write about your play. And I gave him back the thing because I didn't want to say all the terrible things I was thinking.
Well, that's fair.
But mainly, I said, you try not to look for what's positive and what people would enjoy seeing.
I agree. Because that's what people who read reviews are interested in theater. Right. So that's my pet peeve in life is reviewers who go and they hate everything. You kind of wonder why they even review.
Yeah.
You basically, and you're a lover of theater as I am.
But you also have idiosyncratic editors. I had one editor who didn't really want you to mention other plays by the same author. Another editor does. I had one editor where if I put in the amount of money, $20, if I put in $10 for seniors, took that out. And another editor wants that information. So you are also writing for the editor. I'm aware if I have an editor with any odd quirks, liking any particular thing, I'm aware of that. And sometimes I may be aware of it and try to sneak something in. And then it's very interesting to see if they cut something out, what did they cut out?
Yeah.
But I very, very rarely get edited.
All right, well, that's good. Now, in closing, what advice would you give to a young writer, young theater person who wants to get in reviewing?
You know, it's so hard because so many jobs one falls into instead of really seeking out.
That's true. But let's say they have their heart set on it and they took courses and they had...
See a lot of plays.
Okay.
Well, I would say go see a play, go home and write up the review, and then start comparing it. Compare it here, compare it with the reviewers in New York if the play was there. See what they did that you didn't do or what you're doing that they didn't do. And then go in, you know, journalism professors are very accessible, and editors are very accessible. Go in and talk to a professional. Say, can I talk to you? Can I show you my writing? Would you help me with this? Look for a mentor.
That's good. Very good. And then, of course, what you did wouldn't hurt either. Send it around to some of the papers.
Well, you have, I think it was Robert Heinlein who said, you know, if you're writing something and it sits in your drawer, it's worthless. Send it out.
Yeah, see what happens. Well,
but let me also say,
okay,
don't quit your day job. This is not a high-paying profession.
That's for sure. There's only a few people that really can make a living at the major
papers. But even so, I think there's easier ways to make big bucks.
Yeah, but you got to do it because you love it, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Beverly, so much. This has been a terrific interview. And folks, thank you for listening. And remember, go see a play this week.
Chicago. Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you Chicago's theater news for the week of August 6th, 2007. Victory Gardens Theater, Chicago's number one presenter of new plays, will be opening its doors to its recently renovated Biograph Theater main stage for its second annual open house celebration this Saturday, August 11th. Enjoy a free day of family fun, backstage tours, sneak peek performances at the company's upcoming 2007-2008 season, theater class demonstrations, music, food, and of course, refreshments. Some of the 2007-2008 season productions to have scenes presented at the open house celebration will be The Defiant Mouse by Nicholas Patrica, A Park in Our House by Pulitzer Prize winner Nilo Cruz, A Big Blue Nail by Carlisle Brown, Four Places by Joel Drake Johnson, Relatively Close by James Sherman, and The Snow Queen by Michael Smith. For information on how to participate in the open house celebration of Chicago's historic Biograph Theater, you can get in touch with the Victory Gardens box office at 773-871-3000 or by clicking on over to www.victorygardens.org. Again, that's victorygardens.org. Bailiwick's Bare Naked Lads will perform naked for a special Naked Night audience on Friday, September 7th. The audience for this special performance will indeed be co-ed, and each of them is asked to bring a towel and a gym bag when they arrive to the theater. Clothed, of course. The audience members will disrobe and sit on their towels during the show, and then dress again before exiting the theater. For this special performance, a portion of the ticket price will go to support GLANTS, the Great Lakes Area Natural Tan Society. GLANTS, which is a Chicago charter club of the American Association for Naked Recreation, the AANR, believes in essential wholesomeness of the human body and, of course, in social nudism. Bailiwick's Bare Naked Lads have been celebrating their hilarious branch of nakedness and have been performing in Chicago for over 3 years. They recently extended their show until November 24th due to high demand and popularity. For tickets and reservations for Bailiwick's Bare Naked Lads special Naked Night, call 773-883-1090. Again, that's 773-883-1090. Or you can click on over to bailiwick.org. Striding Lions Inter Arts Workshop will be bringing together choreographers, dancers, theater practitioners, and musicians for its two-week festival, Reasons for Moving, starting this August 9th. The 6th annual Inter Arts Festival will consist of 3 multidisciplinary pieces performed nightly and will also feature a workshop with Goat Island, a performance from the company's apprentice program, and a storyteller's musician event. Be sure to click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section to find out more information about the pieces and to find out whether they're theater, they're dance, or something else entirely different. Reasons for Moving will be performing Thursdays through Saturdays for those 2 weeks, starting on August 9th. The performances will be held at the National Pastime Theater located at 4139 North Broadway Avenue. For tickets, be sure to call 773-561-0494. Again, that's 773-561-0494. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from the second part of King Henry IV, Act 5. Scene 1.
A friend in the court is better than a penny in purse.
Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's new review segment. In this segment from this day on, we will be talking about one or two current plays, and I will always have a guest reviewer with me. This week, we have Beverly Friend, who is the theater critic for the Pioneer Press.
It's Pioneer Press City Version.
City Version, okay. Thank you for the correction. And there's two shows we want to talk about. The first one will be High School Musical, the Disney phenomena that just opened on August the 1st. Beverly, give us your take. Tell us a little bit about what it's about and a little bit of the background.
Well, first let me say that when I saw the title, being the grandparent of several teenagers, I thought, wow, I have just the perfect people to take and see this. So I asked the 14-year-old, and she turned me down. And I asked the 13-year-old, and she turned me down. And I asked the 18-year-old, and he turned me down. And everyone said, take Brenda. Brenda is the 7-year-old. So that's the person who was thrilled out of her mind to go with me. And then I talked to my 23-year-old granddaughter who said, Grandma, you will love it, and Brenda will love it, but nobody in between would like it at all.
That's interesting because my research showed that its audience is 10 to 12-year-old girls. Kind of the tweenies, I guess you would call them.
I guess there was a lady I think she was from Southtown. She was walking around with a black folder. She was a reviewer, and she was interviewing children. And she said, you know, did you see the movie? Why did you come to see this? And she looked at me, and she said, I thought there'd be more teenagers here. In any case, she and I expressed surprise to each other that it wasn't a place. This show was not Grease. And by not being Grease, it lost a lot because Grease offers a lot more. It's more edgy. And this is really not an edgy production. This is very, very mild and uplifting and bland and sweet and cheerful. And
yeah, it was originally a Disney movie.
Okay. With all the pejoratives you can put on the word Disney.
Yeah, it was one of those, blandly average is one of the terms I use for it. that has a almost a cult following of junior high kids.
Of teeny boppers.
Yeah, of the young teeny, 10, 11, 12-year-old girls. Because opening night.
This was a happy 7 year. Oh, I've never seen that many children. And also what occurred to me is we are downtown at the LaSalle Bank Theater on Monroe at least $75 a ticket.
78 for the main floor.
78 ticket. And the place is filled with children. And I thought, wow, who's spending this kind of money? Would I spend this kind of money on my grandchildren? No.
Okay.
Or even on myself.
Well, one of the things I said was that for a Disney show, it was amazingly mediocre.
Well, what I said was, and my review doesn't come out in Pioneer until Wednesday and Thursday.
Pioneer Press on Wednesday and Thursday, right?
Okay. But what I will say as what I saw, it reminded me of Archie Book Comics. I felt I was inside an Archie comic. But what it also reminded me of was the American Girl show. Down at the American Girl doll place, because that one pitches a show that says be all that you can be, and this is the same thing. And then Hats, which just closed, pitched the sentence, if you settle for what you've got, you deserve what you get. And I like that too. And this is the same theme now reiterated again. Everything is possible, no matter how outrageous it may seem. And we can sit here and poke holes in this plot from now to forever. Why didn't they do this? And why didn't they do that? And why didn't they solve the problem? Nonetheless, terrible problem solved by the ingenuity of the kids, which is implausible, but cutesy. And everything goes happily on its way.
Yeah, my problem was the thin premise.
Very thin.
I mean, there's a conflict with the boy playing in this championship basketball game or regional playoff game.
Are we going to tell that much?
And auditioning for a play, and the girlfriend, her conflict is with her being in the math science club and the audition, which in reality, they would have gone and talked to the teachers.
They could have solved it.
Or gone to the principal and said, hey, why are these conflicts here?
But musicals are not supposed to make sense. They're supposed to rise above reality.
Yeah, and what I found out in doing some research, they wanted to recreate the stage show, the film on stage.
But the film was probably just as silly.
Yeah, and it was lightweight material. But they were pandering or playing to that teeny bopper, that 10, 11, 12-year-old audience.
But the theater was filled.
Yeah, and the tour will fill. But my basic problem is I think it's a dumbing down. I really do. I think they had the opportunity. And why they did this as a national tour is, they had originally given amateur rights for the production and community theater rights. And then they realized what a gold mine they have, so they're cashing in. And I don't know. I think if you're going to do that, the lesson you send the kids is to raise the standard. I would have taken this show and raised it to another level, maybe made the book writing better and some of the singing be better. But then that's me.
Well, the point is that this is teenagers nowadays are brighter, sharper, living in a world that's not quite as fairy tale as this world is, and that's why it appealed to little ones. I have a rule when I take someone to a play with me, no matter what their age is. Because I write for the city papers and I live in the suburbs, I have this feeling that no one ever sees what I write. It's like sending it off like a paper airplane, zoom, 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 and then a check comes back, and then I write the next review, and a check comes back, so I have nobody to talk to now that I'm a widow. So if you go to a play with me, I usually write the review that night, and I email it, and you must answer me, or you don't get to another. You must have a correspondence with me about it. The kids are the best. The adults tend to say, oh, this is really nice. I really like what you wrote. But the kids will say, so Brenda, with Rob and her sister typing the answer, this is what I got from
Brenda.
This
is from the 7-year-old now.
This is from Dear Grandma. Robin is typing this for me. I'm happy you put in the part about the basketballs in your review. I thought it was a good part. See, I had said I really like the basketball dance. I like the singing and dancing, especially at the end. But I also like the beginning a lot because it made me interested right away. Brenda. Now, Robin, who is 14, who is typing this, said, I'm glad you included the bit about the age group that this show is aimed at, that she's one who turned me down. I'm sure many, many parents and grandparents will value the advice, Robin. So that was my feedback on this play.
Very good, very good. That's all I'm going to say about it, except I ended my review by saying that who can turn down a 10, 11, or 12-year-old girl? If they want to see it and you have one of those in your family, you're going to be down there at the LaSalle Bank, so you just might as well go get your tickets.
And I ended mine by saying, as if this isn't enough, they're now planning an ice show based on the same thing, so you can keep going on into infinity.
Well, whoever heard that Disney doesn't know how to cash in on things. All right, our next show, and one with we probably won't have a lot to say about, but I thought was kind of cute, was Joe the Musical that is playing at Chicago Dramatist. When we saw it, Michael Mahler, who we had just did a podcast last week on, who's one of the bright young talents, was the star in it, but it also had a lot of other good equity actors in it. And it was basically a dream story about this kid who's this classical actor, and he gets caught up into sort of a nightmare that he's caught up into a musical, and he hates musicals.
And if you think that the Hollywood one was a simplistic plot, I don't see where you could possibly find this more profound or complicated, because this was a very rough, very uneven workshop production. I don't know what it will ultimately be, but it has a long way to go.
Well, you see, I liked it a little more than that. I thought it was a clever play, you know,
being caught in a dream.
Well, it's really a backstage musical, but it's not 42nd Street and so forth. It's kind of modern, and I think it has some potential. I thought there was some good writing in it.
I think that it may well have potential, but I would reserve judgment until I see it much further along the way.
That makes sense, but I think there's enough there to take a look at. And if I was a producer at some of the regional theaters, I might want to come take a look at that. I agree with you. It is raw.
If I was a producer, I might go. As a regular theater goer, I would find something else.
Okay. Well, the only thing was maybe for $15, though.
For $15, okay.
Okay.
If I had $15 to spare,
okay,
I would take my $15 and I would clutch it in my hands and I would go down to Navy Pier and I would go to one of the short Shakespeare productions, because that is the best buy in town.
That's true. That's true. Well, thank you, Beverly.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Beverly Friend for giving us the honor of interviewing her this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And most importantly, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.